D7-2 is the professional PC text multi-tool designed for automation in diagnostic, Windows repair, and malware removal. No other tool can help you automate more, relax more, and get paid with less effort than ever. Podnuts likes to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Geeks News episode 113. I am so glad to be back after a weekend in Disneyland and then a weekend at NELF in Boston with the rest of the Podnuts crew. Tonight, we've got a special guest with us. I've been looking forward to this ever since we heard about this. And ever since, actually, Mitch and Fred went to the Mike Tech Show 500. They came back and they said, hey, we want to bring Corey on from Instant House Call. Want to bring him on, have him talk about his product and just the knowledge that he brings to the tech industry. And I said, let's do it. So here it is. We have done it. He's here with us. But before we get to him, I'm going to check in with all of our other hosts first. Hey, Tim, how's it going?
Good, baby. How you doing?
I'm doing well. My ears are plugged up. I'm tired from flight, but I wouldn't have changed it for the world.
Yeah, man. It's everybody's going places. Mike Tech and you guys going, no, it's the same Disneyland. I'm just the guy in the basement.
You need to get out more often.
I should go somewhere.
All right.
I'm good, hey, though. Mitch, it's nice. Oh, it's so beautiful. I'll tell you where I went. I went to my garage.
That's there you go. Been. Hey, you know what? Sometimes that in itself is a vacation.
It's been outstanding. You know, sunny and warm. I get out. It's so awesome. All the griping I did all winter. Prayer's been answered, chat room. I'm outside now and happy. So
nice. Yep. Nice. All right. Hey, Mitch, how's it going?
It's going pretty good. Weather's breaking. It's getting around 60. No rain today, sunny. I scrubbed the floors last night in the hallway. My wife was real surprised. Vacuumed the steps. And I haven't fixed any PCs in a week or two. No one's called me. That's fine.
You're on vacation.
Yeah.
That's what that is. That's what we like to call in the tech industry, vacation. And somebody who is on every now and then, it's a pleasure to have him here, the Chupacabra. Hey, Fred, how's it going?
Going good, Martin. Glad to have you back.
I'm glad to have you back.
I was following. Yeah, good point.
I feel like I need to reintroduce myself to you.
I know. You were gone so long. No, it looks like I was following your pictures there from your Disneyland trip. Looks like you guys had a good time with the family. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, cool. Glad you made it back safely and everybody's good.
Yeah, we're all doing really good, really good. Well, I will let you introduce Corey and talk about that.
Sure, yeah. Well, briefly, I met, we were in at the Mike Tech Show meetup in the conference hall, or in a conference room, and they had tables set up, and Corey was sitting behind me. He was in the kind of the back row, sitting one table behind me, and I was struggling through Windows 8, trying to figure out something.
No, I'm sorry. I couldn't help it. Go ahead, continue.
And so he quite nicely looked over my shoulder and said, oh, I can help you with that.
Did he hand you a Linux distro?
No,
I'm sorry.
So he came over. Anyway, it all started from there. So then we went into the whole Windows 8, tips and tricks and why it does what it does. And he was very, is very knowledgeable. So that's what we wanted to bring him on to talk about. But also, he's also a sponsor over at the Mike Tech Show. And I think that's great that, you know, when one of our shows, little small podcasts, when you get a company that comes in to sponsor them, I just think that's great. And I think that we need to support those people that sponsor, you know, help out the little guys. So thanks for that, Corey. But anyway, Instant House Call, Corey, can you tell us a little bit about your product and what it does?
Yeah, absolutely. So Instant House Call is remote support software. Lets you view and control any PC or Mac through firewalls. I'm sure you've seen and used some of our competitors. What it does is it works from a PC, it works from a Mac, or works to a PC or a Mac, and you can help your customers remotely.
Okay, great. Where are you located, Corey?
We're located in Toronto.
Oh, all the way up in Toronto. How's the weather up there? Is it warmed up?
It's a beautiful day today here, actually. Beautiful.
That's a great city. You had something new come out with your product there, something with Windows 8, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So we just released the first Windows 8 app, the first fully functional Windows 8 remote support app for desktop and tablet.
Right.
And that's actually how you and I started our conversation the other day.
Yeah. Have you rolled that out? Is it available now? Or
it's available now in the Windows Store. So you just go to the Windows Store, type Instant House Call, and you can download it there. There's also a new free edition that goes along with it. So the free edition lets people do unlimited on-demand remote support. for one full year. And then if you want additional features and upgrades, they're available as well.
Awesome. The you were talking about the different types of access. You know, I know that, you know, we all talk about unattended access and you know, stuff like that. I know a lot of people with LogMeIn, you were saying that LogMeIn actually did you some pretty good favors, but but you were talking about the you had three different types of access, correct? Can you explain that a little bit to people?
Yeah, absolutely. So when I refer to on-demand remote support, that's typically used in like a break-fix scenario. So your customer needs help. They need help right now. They, you know, they do a very quick download of a small applet, connect to you. You can view and control their computer. And then once the session ends, you can't access their computer again. So that's on-demand remote support. The other type that you were just referring to is unattended access, where you, the technician, or what we call a specialist, will initiate the session. And then you go into your customer's computer, typically used in, say, a managed services type of scenario. You go into your customer's computer on your schedule, and you can continue to access it again and again, sort of like RDP or LogMeIn or a lot of those other tools. Right. And then the third type is kind of a hybrid between the two. So it's unattended on-demand. And what that means is, say you're a small shop, and you're physically out on a house call. You can't take your customer's call, but you don't want to make your customer wait for you to connect to them. So you can set up a time window in unattended on-demand. Your customer will automatically connect to you without them having to physically be present. And then once the session is finished, again, just like on-demand, you can't access their computer again without another invitation.
That's cool. Now, is that the one that will send you out a text message or an email?
Yep. You can set it up to send an SMS. So if you're on the road, you get an SMS with your customer's info. You can call up your customer, say, hey, I'll be with you in 10 minutes or I'll be with you tonight. You can also set up an email. There's a bunch of different ways you can get that set up.
That's cool. The customer support, let's say, I know we were talking to a guy, who at the Mike Tech Show meetup, who was a customer of yours, and he really had nothing but good things to say about your product. And one of the things he commented upon is customer support. If you do have a problem, which apparently there's not many, but when you call up, who do you talk to? Do you get a call center in some other country?
You'll typically get
well. You're in Canada, correct?
Yes, exactly.
So technically, you totally just technically took my joke from me.
Oh, did I?
I'm sorry. I had that set up for 2 weeks.
Oh my gosh! Oh,
I'm so sorry.
All right, it was pretty good, but 2 weeks. Come on, buddy, you got better.
Well, let me tell you a joke about a guy with an orange head. No,
no, don't.
I'm sorry, Fred. I really didn't mean.
Derailed. Oh well. See, okay, so somebody,
see what happens when you keep telling your non jokes. You don't recognize a real one anymore.
Yeah. So at any rate, back to customer support, Corey. I've heard it's pretty stellar. So if somebody has a problem, who do they get to talk to?
They can speak to me directly, or they can submit a ticket, send an email, whatever they prefer. And we typically get back to customers pretty quick. If you call, you'll very often get myself, and I can answer those questions. We're not a huge company here. It's pretty personal service.
Right. One other thing I was going to bring up was the you know, as techs, oftentimes with remote support, getting people connected can be a challenge, to say the least. You know, it's like no, the blue box. No, click the blue box to the left. No, the one above that. So can you tell me how difficult is people to get connected? Because I think that's one of those techs, one of the things that we're constantly looking at when we're reviewing these types of products.
Right. So that's something that we're constantly trying to improve. I think we've got it to a point now where it's pretty simple. But your customer goes to a website. It can either be your website or it can be what we have, a support portal that's branded for you. Customer clicks on a link and they download a small applet, click start session, and you're connected. There's no keys, no codes, no pins. Very, very straightforward. Very, very simple.
Now I got a question real fast. Does a UAC come up when they click your applet?
Yeah, absolutely. The answer to that is actually twofold. There's two separate types of applets. There's what's called the safe applet and the standard applet. So the standard applet will bring up UAC on the initial prompt. And the reason for that is so that you can click the UAC remotely. So you don't have to ask your customer to do anything when UAC comes up, if you want to edit the registry or add remove programs. The second type, the safe applet, is for cases where either your customer doesn't have administrator permissions, or they simply can't install software because of a virus or malware or something like that.
Gotcha.
And that gives you sort of emergency access to your customer's computer.
So you would be the one to initiate or a UAC or is it? Did I understand that right?
No. The customer, when they first run the program, just like they're installing any other program, it'll prompt them with UAC. Once that's done once, and there's a little bit more to this. I don't know how much detail you want me to get into here. But once that's done once, your customer never has to do it again. You can do everything remotely, including elevating through UAC. Another piece to that is once you've installed the software on your customer's computer, then you can your customer can click an icon. It won't ask for UAC, but you'll still be able to do the elevation. So it's install once, and then you always have administrator permission after that.
Okay, gotcha. Very good.
Yeah, Martin, do you have a question for Corey?
Yeah, one of the things that I have, I mean, this is one of the things that floored me about your product was your integration. You know, earlier you had mentioned about giving your customer support. So not only would this be used, definitely would be used for support, but, you know, the tools and how would you go about providing your customer that extra level of support? And I am floored by the fact that the D7 product from our friend and actually, you know, a contributor to Podnuts is actually integrated into your product.
Yeah, absolutely. So that a big hat tip to Nick Shaw on that from Foolish IT. His software is integrated into an Instant House Call. And beyond that, they're made to work together. So for example, when you first launch D7, I think we know that if you use it incorrectly, you can do something that you don't intend to do. It'll take a restore point so that if you do make a mistake, it'll automatically take that restore point. It automatically installs the software, uninstalls the software. When you save reports, they get saved to the technician side. If you, rather than the customer side, for example, if you right click a file, choose Google this, it'll open up on the technician side where it belongs. So there's all kinds of integration between the two programs. And that's included with Instant House Call.
And that is, I mean, that alone right there is well worth the cost because, I mean, it would be one thing if it was, you know, this product and then you can do this for another cost, but you're throwing that in there included in the cost. And I think that is just, that is a huge bonus and a huge benefit of your product because you get such a, not just a little tool, not just something that's, you know, like Malwarebytes or, you know, something, you know, kind of niched, but this Swiss Army knife of tools and possibilities and fixes that D7 comes with. And I think I just personally from a tech point of view, I think that is just, that's awesome.
it's very popular. People really, really love it.
I think it's what's really, I've been able to test, Instant House Call a little bit. I unfortunately during the trial, I didn't have any real customers, so I had to make some up, but, one of the things that D7 is, see, cause what I'll do is I have like a remote, folder, desktop. So I'll take that folder with all my tools in it and copy it over. But with D7, you don't need to do that. I mean, the tools are already in D7 that I use. So it's there. So it's great. I really like that functionality. And also it didn't take forever. I thought it would take forever to boot up and get ready. And it really doesn't. It was quite quick. Anybody else have anything else for Corey? Tim?
I have... Oh, go ahead, Tim. Sorry.
Tim's on another planet. Look at him.
All right.
No, I'm here. I don't know why you said my name, but... No.
Oh, we were asking if you had any questions.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that... excuse me. I'm sorry if I missed this. This is something that installs. What happens with the updates? Is my customer going to get a lot of annoying messages? Is this something that stays installed over time, or is this something that gets installed at the end of the process, or...
It's a great question, actually. So the answer to that is both. When you end a session, you have two options. And Fred probably noticed this when he was testing out the product. You can either leave the software installed on your customer's computer, or you can force an uninstall. And so certain people don't want that icon to be on the desktop, so they'll force an uninstall. Other folks want that icon like a calling card, so the next time their customer has an issue, they don't have to walk them through downloading it. So they just leave a little icon. You can brand it with your own logo, with your company name, and then your customer just double-clicks on that to connect to you. And then after a while, a lot of your customers just become trained to not even call you. They'll just set up the unattended on-demand, or they'll just start a session, type in what the problem is, and walk away. In terms of updates, a couple different ways. You can actually remotely update your customer's software. So when there's a new version of the software and you connect, it'll say, hey, your customer is using an older version of Instant House Call. Do you want to update it? And it will automatically update it and reconnect to you. Or your customer can just download and overinstall it.
Yeah, I mean, is there, some of the other options out there as far as remote software, you can tweak it. So it's like, if there's error messages, if there's updates, you know, do I get the messages or the customers get the message? What I don't want is a lot of my customers getting a lot of that kind of stuff, because obviously that's just one more annoyance. And I don't want them clicking anything anyway. And if there's an error, why would they want to know it? So I just wondering, you know, if updates and this kind of stuff, is that something that it sounds to me like that's something that I can handle in the background. Don't need to be harassed by any of this stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. Everything is built to try to remove your customer from having to do anything. Everything's intended to be automated.
What is there any limitation to the number of remote computers that you have access to? I mean, as far as, well, I think there, depending on your license, there is at the same time, but, right. But I mean, just overall, I mean, can you just have an unlimited number of computers in that list?
So we break it down between on-demand and unattended. So the on-demand folks, the ones who you're using for, say, break fix, they're completely unlimited. You can have, you pay for one license, you get unlimited on-demand sessions, unlimited customers. There's no limit there. In terms of the unattended access, different licenses have different levels. So it depends on the license that you choose. In a nutshell, the Express Edition includes 20 unattended. The Professional Edition includes 200 unattended. If you want to add more, there are options for that as well. The unattended on-demand, I guess I should mention that hybrid one I was talking about, that doesn't count towards your unattended list. It's just strictly the permanent unattended guys.
I love that unattended on-demand. I can see where that could be extremely useful for somebody who is, you know, doing quite a bit of remote support. That's great. Go ahead.
Sorry, no, I was going to say, especially for smaller shops, that's a super popular feature because they can't be everywhere at once. That's just reality.
Right. Anybody else have anything else for Corey?
I wanted to talk about that unattended thing. So there's a lot of times where, as techs, we have to work after hours. I mean, I was working with a client in the Bay Area down in San Francisco, and she's so busy but she has an issue, so I have to jump in after hours. And something like an unattended install is exactly what I'm looking for, because I just can't up and fly, you know, to Palo Alto to work on her product after hours. So now I can go ahead and work on this, you know, after hours when she's gone, and I don't have to worry about that. I can take my time, and I can be sitting on the couch watching TV with the family or something like that and working on that. So unattended installs are really cool. I was looking through your website and came across the business features tabs. And one of the things that stood out to me, and it said accept payments online. So and it says it's integrated into PayPal, or it says your own merchant processor. So you can prompt them with your product when you run your one-time installer. They click on it. You do the process, you do the job, and then now you're going to basically the products, you're done with the call, and it's going to be removed from their computer. But before you do that, you can prompt for payment.
Yeah, exactly. So there's actually three different ways you can set that up. You can set it up to request payment before, and that's actually mostly done in your shopping cart. So you would request the payment before the session, and then it would redirect them to the download. They get the software, you uninstall at the end of the session. That is a reasonably common one. I typically don't encourage it. And the reason I don't is sometimes you can't fix the problem, and then you have to pay for a refund. There's obviously merchant services costs with that. So what I typically recommend is folks connect to their customer, make sure it's something they can fix. It's also good sort of from a PR or building trust perspective. You connect to the customer and you poke around, you give them an estimate, you take your payment during the session, and then you continue on with the session and do the actual work. builds a bit of trust with your customers. I think it looks good for you, and it ensures you don't have to pay for that refund.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, sorry. Go ahead.
No, I think that is a brilliant idea, having a payment inside of this application. I mean, as it is right now, for myself, I have a bookkeeper and accountant, and you know, my billing is handled just a little bit differently. But you know, there are times when I have to do residential support, and I have to, you know, create them an invoice, and then it gets mailed out and everything like that. And at the time they want to pay me, and I'm like, well, wait for the invoice so the book, you know, accounting doesn't get all messed up. And or if they want to pay me, I usually have to maybe do like the Square. But having integrated into the application is just that's that one little step that kind of takes it to the next level that makes it so much simpler, and that adds just a whole lot more functionality and ease of use, both for the technician like myself and for the client.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a very popular feature. And again, with smaller shops, particularly Break Fix, people love it. And so we integrate straight out of the box with PayPal. You just type in your PayPal ID and the system will take care of the rest. If you have a different type of shopping cart, which is pretty common, we'll integrate with that. We just need some technical details, and then we do the integration for you.
Nice.
Yeah, I didn't even notice that feature. Go ahead.
Oh, I have just another question. I didn't want to take anybody else's.
No, go ahead.
I know this. You have branding, which is great. I like that. Now, do you? Is there when somebody goes to click on your you know, if you're the tech and I have to make a connection to you, or we're going to make a connection so you can work on my computer, do I have to go to your page, or can I have my own, like, with can I integrate your product into my web page, like in an iframe or something like that, so it kind of looks a little more, it looks seamless, or is it more like some other products where you really kind of have to go to their product first? Or does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a question I get asked all the time. And I feel like I'm answering this to everything, but there's three different ways to do that as well.
You're a man of many choices. What do you want to go for dinner? Well, there's three different choices we have here.
The answer is always three. Ask me any question, the answer will be
three. It's always three.
So the first option is support portal. The support portal is yourcompany.instanthousecall.com. And that's branded for you. You put your logo at the top left. It's a generic template, and a lot of folks are happy with that template. They prefer to use it. That's option one. Option number two is a direct download link from your website. So in the background, it is actually going to the Instant House Call website, but your customer will never see that. They just click the link, and it looks like it's downloading straight off your website. And one of the advantages to that is when we do an upgrade, you don't have to upload the new MSI or EXE or whatever to your website. It's all transparent to you. And then the third option is you can create links for social media or basically anywhere you can put an HTML link. You can embed a place where your customers do it. Some people put it at the bottom of their email. Some people put it in their social media. I'm sure people put it elsewhere. But anywhere you can put an HTML link, you can do it.
Well, we joke about having three options, but those three options are they're growing steps. You know, if you're brand new and you're a tech and you're starting out and you don't have a web page and stuff yet, you can go one way. But then as you grow and you maybe get a web page and you get more ticketing systems set up and you kind of make a web presence for yourself, this, you know, your product has the flexibility to grow with a tech.
Yep, absolutely.
I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's kind of neat. You know, if you think about it, it really is kind of an all-in-one remote support product for a tech, because, like you said, you could get payment. You don't have to have anything, you know, spectacular. You've got D7 built into it. And, you know, like you said, you can brand, you know, a page on your site. So I think it's great. I've been really impressed with it.
So I do have one more question, though.
Fire. Yeah.
The question.
The question has three answers.
And this is the one where you guys all may go at me. But any future support for Linux?
For Linux?
I told you.
You had to go there.
I knew it. I had to ask, but I was just curious.
I got to ask, are you referring to from the technician side or from the customer side?
From the technician side.
From the
customer side. The reason I ask is because I mainly, since I do a lot of networking, I work on both Windows and Linux machines, and so my primary laptop is a Linux box. Mm-hmm. So I was just curious if this could be a product that I could use on my Linux box.
The answer is yes and no. Right now, what a lot of folks do who run Linux is they'll run it inside of Wine or Wineskin. And it works well. The only place where it falls a little bit short there is in terms of file transfer. The Wine container can't do the drag and drop file transfer. But other than that, for regular stuff, yeah, you can do it. And what some people will do is they'll either put the files that they want into the skin, or they'll just have them, say, on Dropbox or SkyDrive or wherever they prefer to have it.
Got it. Yeah. Got it. Now, that's from the tech point of view. What about it? What about the
customer?
Customer. Thank you.
customer, there is not support for Linux at this time.
Okay. I just wanted to ask.
Now, what kind of a self-respecting Linux user would call for remote support?
I'm just asking. You never know. It may be, hey, can you show me how to put this funky icon on my desktop? I don't know.
I was going to say, the answer to that would be Fred.
Yeah, that's right. I would be the guy who would need it for sure.
I tried Linux. I gave it 2 weeks.
I gave it a month. No. And it crashed.
I just find the start button anymore.
Thank you for hearing me on that, Corey. I was just curious because, you know, I was just curious.
Fair enough.
All right. Well, anything else on Instant House Call, Corey, that you want to bring up, or any more questions before we move along to something else?
No. Let's keep on moving.
All right. Well, great. Well, Corey, go ahead, Tim.
Real quickly, I did have one question. Where did Instant House Call come from? I mean, is this your baby? How long have you been working on this? And anything in the future you see coming as far as features?
This is my baby. I think I mentioned this at the Mike Tech show. So the way it actually got started was many years ago. I worked at a college in Toronto, and what my job was basically closed captioning for deaf students in class. So I would type as the teacher spoke.
Okay.
And because I had a little bit of a technical background, they always put me in the technical classes because I could do it accurately. And so one of the students there wanted to be a computer tech. So because I had a programming background, I put together a small program that did, you know, basic remote and chat. And you can actually see some of the intentions from that still in the program today. It's made to not have to talk to people. That's why you don't have to type in a code or a PIN or whatever. So I built this, you know, basic program for him that did remote and chat, and then started sort of looking at it. I'm like, you know what? There's a market for this, and it just continued to grow from there pretty organically.
Okay. Well, that's awesome.
That is cool.
Yeah.
What about going into the future? Are there features you would love to have that you haven't installed yet, or just any kind of anything you see coming down the pipe?
Yep. If you stay tuned, you'll see something very cool coming down the pipe. I don't want to spoil the surprise, but there's some neat stuff coming.
Very good answer. Very good answer. Okay, great.
Oh, come on. You can tell us.
Nobody it's just between anybody, us, right?
We promise.
Yeah.
No. No. Again, thanks, Corey, for coming on, and thanks for being a supporter of the podcast. And, well, we certainly do appreciate that. But the other reason, and by the way, anybody in the chat room have any questions for Corey, please just post them up and we'll certainly shoot them across to him. The other thing that the conversation that we found interesting was the Windows 8 controversy. And you had some interesting thoughts on that, not shared by our resident.
Yeah, let me start by saying that I love Windows 8. I think it's I've always been a huge supporter of it. I just don't feel that anybody should use it.
Yeah. It's great for business.
I think last week you what was the quote? It shouldn't even be called Windows. Let's call it Storm Windows.
I don't know. You gotta understand that I hate it, but I keep coming back and I keep trying to love it. So if you have anything good about it to say, I want to know it. There was a big announcement yesterday. They're gonna. I don't know if it's actually gonna fix the thing that I've been complaining about the whole time, but I understand there's gonna be some changes coming or an update or something. So
yeah, the update was released today. Actually,
was it today?
Okay, the first one. There's a second one coming shortly. I don't know if you guys know, this week was Build, which is Microsoft's sort of their big announcements for developers. And that's how they let developers know what's coming down the pipe. So Build was last week. Today is when Windows 8.1 Update 1 came out. And it includes all kinds of stuff for, I think some of the stuff is going to address what you find uncomfortable with Windows 8. Then they also announced the big thing that I think is going to make you happy is a new start menu is coming as well, but it's not in this particular release.
My question is this start menu, is it going to be another bait and switch, or is it going to be a real start menu?
It's the real deal. It actually looks really cool. I'm not sure if I can send you a video through the chat here, but I will try. But it looks, it's the start menu that you're used to, but it has a new pane for modern apps. So when you click start, you'll have your regular all programs and everything else, but where you typically have control panel and devices and default programs, you'll be able to pin a modern app in that area, and then it expands and contracts depending on how many modern apps you have going.
Right. You know, some of the problems, you know, or the difficulties people have with Windows 8, and I've been using it since we met. What's that been, about 3 weeks or so? I've been using Windows 8.1 natively with no classic shell or start as back or anything like that. And I got to say, I'm getting used to it, and it's becoming quite handy. And as a matter of fact, I find myself flipping back and forth between the tile interface for certain things and the normal desktop for others. But you know, some of the things I don't get, and you know, I spoke with you briefly on the phone today, and the whole charms menu thing. I'm not feeling the love from the charms menu. Do you have any thoughts on why they did that or what the purpose is?
So what I can tell you is that sort of thing, basically Microsoft is backing off of. If you take a look at update one, you'll see that, for example, a lot of the stuff like, not the charms menu particularly, but a lot of that stuff has been, they're simply backing off. They recognize that people don't like it, whether it's right or wrong or better or worse. They're backing off from it. I personally have gotten used to the charms menu, and a good example, I can give you an example from my own product. So you've used the Win32 version of Instant House Call, right?
Yes.
Okay. Have you used the Windows 8 version yet?
Yes.
Okay. So when you're in the Win32 version, along the top, I'm just doing this from memory, but there's File, Connection, Tools, Help. Where do you change the settings? Is it under File Setup? Is it under Edit Preferences? Is it under Tools Settings? Where would you find the settings?
You in Instant House Call?
In any app.
Oh, well, I'm across the top of the menu bar.
Right, but what I mean is you don't necessarily know which menu it's going to be, which drop-down menu it's going to be under.
Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, right.
Okay. Yeah. So it could be File Setup, it could be Tool Settings, and Instant House Call, it happens to be Tool Settings, it could be Edit Preferences. What they've done is they realize, look, all apps have this. Why don't we standardize where it should be? So they put it in the Charms bar under Settings, and now you don't have to go fishing for it.
I see. Right. Yeah, still not feeling it, though.
Corey, I think you did this for Fred. If you get little... Wow, how do I find this program? You just start typing it in the charms, and in the search, it's going to come up. I had no problem with Windows 8. I used it for a while, and the only reason why I quit because my hard drive went up. It just didn't replace the hard drive. I didn't think it was a big deal. You know, I mean, you could just use the Metro look, or you didn't have to. And I thought it was really solid. And I got it when it first came out. I think Microsoft was offering it for like $40 when they first came out, and I got it. And I didn't see all that bad with it. Now I wasn't crazy about a lot of the Metro stuff. Like Skype did not work well when I tried to get that to work.
I went
with the desktop version. That was fine. But it's nowhere near as bad. Like I thought Vista was. I mean, I think Vista was way worse than what Windows 8 is or was.
Yeah, I think a lot of the challenge that I think there's two challenges that Microsoft is having here. The first is that they decided to market the sizzle, not the steak. So if you look at all their ads, it's people disconnecting keyboards from tablets and dancing around. But they're not telling you what's good about the actual software. What's improved and how's it changed? And I think they've really done themselves a disservice there. They I'm willing to bet that I'm the only one here who knows what a touch mouse is. Have any of you guys used a touch mouse before?
What's it called?
A touch mouse.
No, I haven't.
Isn't that the like the big square ones they have for Apple? That's the it's the mouse is itself a touchpad. You move around on it, right?
No, not a touchpad. So there are new mouses, I'm not sure what the right word is, that have a touch surface along the top. So you can left and right click, but you can also drag your finger in. It's kind of hard to describe just verbally, but you can drag your finger in across where the left mouse button key would be. And in Windows 8, that'll bring in another app. So you don't have to go hunting to the top left corner to get it. You just swipe in another app from your mouse. A lot of people don't know that this product exists because they're used to using their old regular scroll wheel mouse. And it makes a huge difference. When you're using Windows 8 with the proper hardware, the difference is massive.
Wow. Tim, you're awful quiet. Sir.
I'm listening. I'm taking it all in.
You had mentioned, Corey, that Microsoft isn't touting some of the benefits. One thing I've noticed, and I think it's extremely snappy and responsive on my machines. Very fast to boot, and within 20 seconds generally, I'm ready to go from pushing the power button. Can you describe maybe some of the things that we're not seeing that are helping us that we just don't know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think part of it is, and you and I talked about this when we met. I think a lot of people use Windows 8 and they hang out on the desktop, so they're not seeing what's happening in the modern app world. Now, let's be realistic. I've got a horse in this race, right? So, a lot of folks will say, "Well, he's just saying this because he has an app and he's trying to sell the app." And fair enough. There's some truth to that, but you have to look at the flip side, which is, would I have a horse in this race if I didn't truly believe that this was a better platform? It's a big investment to make software like this, especially in a new platform that has issues. So what I'm saying is, what's that?
So it's changing environment too. So
it's a very, very different environment. So, when we made this choice to make a Windows 8 app, it wasn't done lightly. And we recognized that there were going to be a lot of people who, didn't see the benefits. But in that sort of, in a journey, if you will, we learned a lot more about the software about Windows 8 than probably the average user. So, to your point, what's better about Metro apps or modern apps? I should be using the right terminology here. A good example, part of the reason that Windows 8 is so snappy is because they're putting restrictions on developers to prevent things that you hate about Windows 7. So for example, when I use Windows 7, something that drives me nuts is my hard drive starts thrashing and my computer slows down. I have to sit there closing a bunch of apps that I'm not using. And I end up with 1,000 things on my taskbar and my computer's running slow. And then I spend 5 minutes closing everything down. With Windows 8, that can't happen. If you put an app into the background, then they give developers 2 seconds to put it into a suspended state. That's it.
Yeah, you told us this when we were there. I remember that. Yep.
And it's huge. And so the idea there is if you get off the desktop and into the modern interface, you're going to have a constant, your computer will constantly run more smoothly. You're not going to have to worry about that stuff.
Yeah, in using the using the tile interface on a desktop machine with a mouse is really it's not hard. And you actually showed me organize your tiles. I never even thought about doing that before. But yeah, take the ones away that you don't want. In 8.1, I guess I don't know if Windows 8 is the same way, but you have your app drawer. So anything you aren't going to use regularly, you just get rid of it, but it's still there down the app drawer. You can access it. And I've been finding myself using the tile modern interface. Is that the PC word? lately. Not all the time, but a lot of the time. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think a lot of the choices that Microsoft initially made were looking at how people actually use their computers. So, when you're using your start menu, I don't think many people use their start menu the way they actually think they, I don't. I know I don't use my start menu. I don't go through start, all programs, accessories, notepad. I just don't do it. I click start, I type notepad, I'm done. Windows 8's built for that. It's built for the way people actually use their computer, which is you click this the Windows key, you're on the modern start screen, and you type Notepad, and there it is. But a lot of people don't know, because again, they were selling the sizzle, not the steak. A lot of people don't know that you can even start typing on that screen, you know, especially consumers. And that's a really, that it's a marketing fail. It's a mistake.
Yeah, I didn't know that. You showed me that, and I actually use that quite a bit. You know, one of the things Tim brought up last week, as techs, you know, when you're, you know, selling computers or recommending computers for clients, you know, he was saying that, you know, he gets a computer to somebody and they'll just call him and say, I just can't use it, you know. So what would be your recommendation to help people along to be able to use it to where they're more familiar, you know? I mean, do you have any tips along that lines?
I guess what I would say is it depends. So if you're talking to someone who is who's a bookkeeper and you're trying to get them to use the modern interface all the time, it's not going to happen. There's no QuickBooks for the modern interface yet. It'll happen at some point, but trying to get them to stay off the desktop, it's not going to work. But if you're talking to a home user and they're browsing the web and doing, you know, very sort of consumery types of things, the modern interface is ready for them now. It'll take time. In time, the more business-oriented apps will come. I think Instant House Call is a part of that. But right now we're sort of in this uncomfortable in-between state where the software developers just haven't gotten caught up. There's not a lot of modern apps for the folks who need them. So you have to use your judgment there in terms of how people use it.
Right. Yeah, you know, some of the things that I've heard in from people is, even a task as easy as, you know, shutting the computer down, have somebody sit down in front of them and say, okay, how do you shut down this computer? People can't find it, you know, and I don't know why. Yeah, just the whole charms menu with the settings just is a little weird, but
I think it was an extra step in that. Yeah, that was annoying.
That's something that's resolved in this latest update, isn't it?
It is. On the start screen, you'll now see it. You'll now see a power button. I think where they were going with that is, you know, that people should be suspending their computers instead of shutting them down for a faster boot up time. I can't speak for Microsoft. I don't actually know. But I think the idea was to be always on. I know I use my computer that way. I never turn off my computer. I leave it on all the time.
Right.
But I'm not sure what the thinking was there. I guess you could say it makes just as much sense to go to settings to shut down your computer as clicking start to shut down your computer. Neither of them make any sense. Oh. But they did. They did.
Yeah, good point.
But they did address it in this update one.
Yeah. Well, I guess we're a day early then on this conversation, or a day late, one of the two. Anyway, so Tim and Martin, you guys, what else? Questions you guys have about Windows 8 for Corey here? I know that we had.
I've used Windows 8 a little bit. I've supported it, it's not bad. I have to be upfront. I am a Linux guy. I don't use the start menu on Linux. I have tools that I just hit. You know, I'm a keyboard guy. I'm in the command prompt a lot. So sitting down at Windows 8 and just starting to type is natural for me. When I work on a Windows 7 machine and I need to pick up Notepad, I also just hit the start menu and type in Notepad. A lot of my customers do not. You know, and these are customers that have been in the business for many, many years and have used computers for many, many years. And they just, you know, so I will watch them. I say, okay, show me what you're doing. And I have to hold my breath because they go start programs, settings, applications. And I'm like, just type help or just type, you know. And so I think that Windows 8, I think that we need that with training and with doing that, Windows 8 is, like you mentioned before, they sold the sizzle, not the steak. And so there needs to be definite training of you can be more efficient. Windows 8 does make it able to do things more efficiently. But on the other hand, I think back to, I wish that they would have done a desktop and a tablet interface. You don't see iOS running. You don't see, iOS 7 running on a Mac. You know, they have two different products for two different platforms. And I think that if Windows 8 would have, I think if Microsoft would have split Windows 8 into two platforms at the very beginning, I think it would have been met with a lot less resistance. I think that the tiled interface it works great on a tablet. I think people are getting used to working on a desktop, but I think that by saying, here it is, you know, you get both in one, ta-da. And then I think it was excuse me, I just think it was too much. And I think that, like I said, I think if they would have split it at the beginning, I think a lot more, there would have been a higher level of acceptance and a lot less, right up front.
Yeah, no,
my opinion.
I agree. I agree with what you're saying. I think people would adapt to it better.
Yes.
The flip side, however, is that my sense is what they were originally trying to avoid was having this hybrid that you're looking for. So an example, I was talking to Fred about this when we were at the Mike Tech Show. An example is, think about, do you know why there are 12 months in a year, 12 inches in a foot, why 12 hours on a clock? Do you know why that number 12 is significant, or why we change from 12 to 13?
It's something to do with a calendar, but it's been a while.
So I don't even remember. I think it was like the ancient Sumerians or something, or Babylonians or something. They used a base 12 numbering system. So we count 0 to 9, which is base 10. They counted 0 to 11, which was base 12. So what we're seeing is, even in 2014, that history is still with us. And when you're looking at when you're looking at making a clean break, making a big change, because really the change from desktop to Windows 8 is the same as the change from DOS to from DOS to Windows, and so they're trying to get all the stuff that was an issue in Windows 7 and break those habits, and you know, not have a million apps running and have the settings in a standardized place. They're trying to avoid having all that the legacy number 12, right?
Sure. No, and I agree with that, and I agree with the fact that they are, and I love the fact that they give the developers only a couple seconds to close down machines, and I love the fact that they force that. But you know, if every single car distributor and every single car maker suddenly started making El Caminos because you get both a truck and a car
at the same time, right hand drive,
then you know, then that there's an issue with that. That I wonder,
I agree
with
you.
Car,
I think that's what they're
truck.
Trying to avoid. I think they're trying to avoid that hybrid car truck, or were trying to avoid it. I think they've given up, quite honestly. But I think they were trying to avoid that that hybrid car truck. They were trying to get you to move into that modern interface. The bottom line is the market didn't accept it, and you're seeing them make those changes now.
Yes, and I agree.
Well, I think from the very beginning, you know, like Tim had said last week, you know, they should have just made it to where out of the box when you installed it, you could say, hey, how do you want this thing to run? You want it to run, you know, with the tile? What do you want? I'm not saying that tiles shouldn't be there, because I do think that eventually people will grow to that interface, because I think touchscreen is going to become more and more and more prevalent. And I know
I'll disagree on that one.
Well,
let me rephrase that. I will agree with you in tablet form, and I think mobile computing will be more prevalent. So then, yes, I'll agree with you. But in the desktop thing, having to reach up and touch your desktop screen and then having to go down to your keyboard and having to reach up and touch it, I don't want to compute like this all day long.
Well, no. I don't know. I don't know what the answer is to that. I mean, you could be right, you could be wrong. But I can tell you.
He knows. He knows that he doesn't want to do that. Don't tell him that he doesn't know what he wants. The man doesn't want, and no, I don't want to do that either. It's an evolutionary step backwards.
But on a tablet,
I have to rub my hands over the screen, then just to flick my fingers around and run the mouse or a touchpad.
Right, but on a tablet, I don't want to have to try to find that little sweet spot where the start menu is, and then have to touch that little section where, you know, I can type in Notepad or something like that. On a tablet, I want big buttons. I want to be able to be efficient. So, you know, but on a desktop, I don't want my desktop being taken over with a whole bunch of big buttons.
Well,
I think they can do both.
No, yeah. No, I'm not suggesting that everybody's going to want to type on their desktop. But I will say that, like, for example, when Corey came over to show me some stuff on my laptop, he kept touching the screen. You know, he kept going, oh, that's right, this isn't a touchscreen. But, I mean, right. he's so used to using touchscreens that he's pre-programmed for that. And my point is that as they become more prevalent, more and more of us will become that way.
Sure.
And that's what I'm saying.
And I will agree with you on a tech point of view. I think us as techs will become more prevalent. You're not going to go, I'm not going to be able to go to my clients who have in a business environment, or even some of our clients who call us on a daily basis because they're of an older age, an older generation, if you will, who are going to want to touch their screen. They are going to be in the habit, and they always have been, of doing a keyboard type stuff. And I just, I think, yes, you're going to have one population growing up with it. And you know what's going to happen? It's going to be like anything else. This is very early on. And as we move forward, this will be adopted more. And eventually, in 20 years from now, we're going to be going to a museum because we're going to be looking at what is a keyboard and what is a mouse. Because it's
brain control.
Right. But right now, in this intermediate time, we're fighting this battle between should we touch it? Should we not? Should we type on it? Should we not? And then where is that happy medium place that makes everybody effective?
Anything more than three touches is purely recreational.
There you go.
Okay.
I didn't mean to cut you off, and I apologize. I just,
Well, no.
A new soundboard.
My point was, before I was so rudely interrupted,
I know.
Was that... as time goes on, and you did say this, but that was my point, where if they gave you the option to have both the tile or the desktop interface, as time goes on, more and more programs or apps will be available in the tile interface. And I think that because we're such a device, can't think of the word. Everybody has a device these days, a hand device, a tablet, a phone. So we are used to apps and using our fingers. So, and I think it's, but the point you said is, you're not going to get your 80-year-old grandmother customer to switch. I agree with that wholeheartedly. But like you said, you have a whole new generation coming up who are going to be used to touching the screen and who are used to apps and tiles and pushing with their fingers. So I think it's going to be, I think that to suggest that we're not going to get there is kind of silly. I think eventually that's what we're going to be doing.
We will, but we're not going to get there on the desktop. This generation coming up is going to be tablet-based, mobile computing driven.
Yeah, I think the desktop, you're right. I mean, I think the desktop will kind of, gamers and Linux freaks will have them, I'm kidding.
Hold on. I can't reach it. I can't quite reach it in the back there. No, but you brought up a good point. Touchscreen Linux computing it has a long ways to go. It has a very long ways to go. It's in the process, but it has a long ways to go.
Yeah, like Linux in general. Sorry.
hold on while I shut down the internet because it's not running well on Linux.
That's right. Oh, you Linux guys. I always got to go to that one.
Yeah, exactly. That's our... Don't tell anybody, but that's our fallback.
That's it. No, but... at any rate, moving forward here, Windows 8.1.1. What else are they showing in that, Corey? I haven't had a chance to look at it.
Yeah, it's hot off the presses, basically. So basically, the new update, I think they're calling it Windows 8 Update 1. I'm not sure, but the new update is going to include all kinds of stuff for mouse and keyboard users specifically. A lot of it really is geared towards that. So you'll be able to right click on the tiles. The taskbar, you'll be able to pin Windows Store apps. Windows Store apps meaning the modern apps, like the full screen apps.
Right.
To the taskbar. And then in the next update for Windows Update 1, they've announced the start menu. Cool. And so the start menu is going to include again apps and traditional desktop applications.
Do you think that this move is driven? I realize that obviously the consumer, everyday household consumer, is not happy with it either. But the business side of it, I can't see any businesses going and saying, "Oh yeah, we're going to integrate this tile interface." Do you think a lot of that has anything to do with it or not? Martin shaking his head no.
Yeah, I do. I think a lot of what you're seeing right now is Microsoft backing off from their original vision. I think they had a very bold vision. People, say Microsoft is old and they don't take risks but this was a huge risk and they took it. I don't think it panned out the way they had hoped. And now they're allowing you to do stuff that like have a start menu. Coming soon is the ability to run Windows Store apps in a window, as opposed to in full screen. All of that stuff is a very distinct change from their original vision. Whether it's right or wrong doesn't matter. The market's spoken. It's very clear that people are rejecting a lot of the traditional or the originally envisioned store apps. So they're doing that. Now, having said that, there are, just like there's Start 8, there's something called Modern Mix. A lot of my customers who use the Windows 8 app do run Instant House Call in Modern Mix. So that allows you to run an app inside of a window on your desktop. And then they get the benefit of the modern app and being able to run on the desktop. That's going to be baked into Windows very soon. Yeah.
Wow. Cool.
What I was shaking my head earlier, Fred, was the implementation of Windows 8 into a corporate environment. I was agreeing with you that there is not that's not happening.
Okay. Yeah, because you know, I can't see. Yeah, I can't see that that flying at least anytime soon. You know, who knows what's going to happen down the road? You know, we can't project. I mean, but I mean, based on this Windows 8, I mean, didn't the guy who headed the spearhead the project, he got fired, and the CEO got fired. So, I guess they realized that that was not the right move. But you know, Tim made a good.
That doesn't seem right. I mean, it's not like this is the first misstep that Microsoft has ever taken.
Yeah,
I mean, come on, I you know.
Yeah, would they write off $8 billion worth of tablets?
You know, the whole thing going from every time they've gone from one OS to the next, some of it has been successful, some of it not, but every step has been painful one way or another, some more than others. But, a lot of what they did, I liked. I mean, I actually like this GUI. I mean, there's a lot about it that I think is great. But it was just jammed down people's throats, period. You know, if they could have just done something that said, you know, hey, here's the Windows that you always use, you've used for how long? Where were we at? I mean, 20 years? Is that what it is?
Well, Windows 7, I mean, Windows XP just ended after 15 years. So you're looking at, you know.
When did the
start? Today.
But I'm talking, when did the start button come out? It's 95.
Oh, it was 90. When's 3.1? Was it Windows 3.1?
No, it was 95.
Or 95.
It was 95, yeah.
95.
So, you know, okay. It's, I understand, and I'm trying to explain to people, I say, look, you know, they're trying to create something that works across all these devices, you know, your phone, your tablet, laptop, whatever. And so, and I said, that makes sense. You know, people who have, you know, Apple computer, they're also going to have the iPhone, they're going to have the iPod. And so, I think that as from branding and marketing and, you know, product integration, I think it makes a lot of sense to have a very similar GUI across all devices. It's just that environment, it works great. On the phone, it works great on a tablet, something that you're only, because you got to have the big buttons. You got to be able to navigate very easily things quickly around with your fingers. When you're at the, you know, when you're at the desktop, when you're at a laptop, you have 100 keys in front of you and the mouse that you've been using forever. And they should have just done something that, hey, this is available here also, but here's your start screen. Okay. Come back around with Windows 9 and force it on. So at least, you know, kind of ease it in, man. You don't just jump in the tub. You stick your toe in there first. You know, it's, I mean, they literally forced a GUI on you to make so that you would, for your devices that you don't own yet. I mean, get the Windows phones. What if the whole Windows phone tablet thing completely tanks and now they have this huge GUI that they have a huge investment, GUI they have a huge investment in. And, I don't know. It just seemed like they could have like used the desktop, the laptops. You know, it could have been. They could have given you something more than they did. Anyway, I don't hate it. I just don't think anybody should use it. That's what I said. That's what I said. And you know what? And look, we'll see about these updates. I'm not going to say that I was always right all along. The Windows is doing what I said, but we'll see. I don't know. I think that I don't know. But I do have a question for Corey. And you know, there were major improvements. I mean, there were huge between Windows XP and Vista. There was a lot under the hood that was changed. Between Vista and Windows 7, there were a lot of improvements made. This is all GUI to the side. There was a lot of stuff under the hood that was changed, improved. Same here. Windows 7, Windows 8, let's put all of the GUI business aside. Can you tell me what improvements have been made under the hood? Because I'll admit, I don't know. Now, you did mention with the applications, they had 2 seconds to stop, and that was that only in the you know, in the new interface, or is that also
that's
like the standard desktop?
That's only in modern apps.
Okay.
So when you're in like the Metro side, you've got 2 seconds. Okay. If you're on the desktop and you minimize it, it's still running. It's still consuming resources.
Okay.
So in terms of other change, I mean, the changes under the hood are absolutely huge. As developers, we have to reprogram everything. It's not like we can take our existing apps. And this is why you're seeing a lot of app lag. It takes a lot of time for people to to move their stuff across. But in terms of what's changed under the hood, there's some really good stuff. So think about the things, name a few things, if you can, that irritate you about Windows 7. And I'll bet you anything that that they're addressed in Windows 8. So what do you dislike about Windows 7, Windows XP, the desktop in general?
You know what? How about the like indexing that in search? I think it's all very slow. I think there's a program I use called Everything that I can just go in Everything search and it has an answer for me right away. Windows indexing, I think, is just forever and ever, and the search is never very good anyway.
So that has been addressed in Windows 8. So if you go to the start screen, you start typing, it'll find pretty much everything. I believe I haven't played with Update 1 enough to say, but there's some Bing search stuff in there as well. I can't really speak to it because I haven't tinkered with it myself. One thing that I personally dislike about the desktop environment is really how virus prone it is, and particularly how keystroke logger prone it is. Sure. So if I'm in a hotel, for example, and I type in my password, I feel like I have the cooties. It's just like it's something that makes me nervous. If I'm in the modern interface, if I'm using something modern, it can't happen. They're sandboxed. Those apps cannot talk outside of each other. And I feel more secure. Yeah,
ironically, my password is my cootie, so I understand what you're saying.
So a lot of the things like the
I thought it was monkey 123.
No,
shh. Okay. It's cooties, but with zeros instead of O's.
So I digress. I digress.
So a lot of the stuff that, and this is why they're making the change. Whether you think it's ugly or pretty or cool or not cool, they're trying to address stuff that's been a problem for a really long time. And keystroke loggers are a good example. Viruses are a very good example. There's things that we've just come to live with. We're used to our computer slowing down because we have too many apps running. We're used to worrying about viruses. That's not to say that Windows 8 is not going to have viruses. It will. But they're taking precautions. Like apps can't talk to each other the way they can in Windows 7. Instant House Call is a good example of that. The way we get your screen is we scrape it. You can't do that if you're a modern app. You can't talk outside yourself without going through that share charm. It's a security thing. And I think it's actually a smart move. Could it use some refinement? Absolutely. But in terms of where they're going with it, it makes sense, and it addresses a lot of the things that we all hate about Windows 7, but we've just come to live with.
Yeah, Nick Shaw from Foolish IT is in the chat room, and he made the comment that he hated the start button in 195, haven't had much use for it since. So
I want to go back to just really quick. You talked about the new patch or the patch that's coming out that's going to create the start menu. It's not this, you know, being that it's the second Tuesday of the month. It's not in this release here, and I assumed that it was. And so I've had people asking me even today, hey, when's my start menu going to come in on my Windows 8 machine? And I said I usually just take some time for Microsoft to do that. I did not realize that it was not coming out today. Do you have a date on that, or do you know when that is?
They haven't announced a date on it yet.
So everybody listening, and I've said this, I apologize, I was wrong. You won't get your start menu yet.
They have shown screenshots of it though, so you can, if you look at the build seminars, you can see what it's going to look like. It looks nice.
It does look nice. It does, and I have seen screenshots, and I was impressed with that.
Yeah,
Microsoft showed pictures but didn't release it, so who knows what they might do.
Tim is. Oh, he is.
Wait! It says Photoshop across the top. Yeah.
Oh my gosh! He got all excited when 8.1 came out with the start button, and he hit it, and he was like, "What's this junk? This isn't a start menu." Oh mercy! All right, anything? What else we got for Corey? Anybody got any other questions? Any other rants?
Real quick, I have something real quick. Since today is the last day for XP getting updates, I don't know. I imagine you still have some Martin and. Tim, I imagine you still have some customers with XP, and maybe Corey, you might have some clients that have Instant House Call and some XP machines. I don't know. How are they going to be affected, or are they? Will they?
Well, was that addressed to Corey? Was that addressed to everybody?
To everybody, actually.
Well, I have clients right now that are on Windows XP. They have purchased computers. I have a couple clients that have a Windows XP machine that they use for, like, you guys know that I support, like, apartment complexes. And so in their resident little business office, if you will, there's an XP machine there, you know, one or two here and there. I've mentioned it to them. They said, you know, it's not the budget. We're going to deal with it.
Right.
What they're pretty much telling me, and I'm reading between the lines, is it's going to get infected, and I'm going to say it's not really worth it. So I give them a couple months before I get the, hey, it's been infected. We can't do anything about it. Or maybe not. I don't know.
I'm getting questions at work. Like, you know, I just fix PCs on a side, and there's still quite a few people that have XP, and they're telling me they're getting all these messages. And from what I understand, Security Essentials will still work for a while.
Yes. Yes,
but yeah, one guy told me he said it wouldn't work anymore, but he doesn't know what he's doing half the time. Right.
The only two things, really.
Well, that's what Windows you say XP, about me too.
Nah. Well, you just get confused.
But yes, today is the last day for support for Windows XP and Office 2003.
Right.
So okay. no more after that. After that, so I don't know. I guess you know we'll have to see if tomorrow the world ends like it's supposed to.
And Corey, I assume Instant House Call does work on XP, correct?
It does, yeah. I mean, like, you know, I don't have the stats in front of me, but there's a good chunk of people who are still using XP. I don't know when that's going to start to dwindle, but it hasn't been, you know, noticeable on this end, I can tell you that much.
Right. Yeah, we still have a few. I mean, there might be 20 machines in where I work at, and probably two-thirds of them still have XP on them.
No, I was not. I had no grand illusions that as of today, everybody was going to be on Windows, you know, 7 or 8 or even Vista because of that. This is going to take a long time, and it just is what it is.
Here's another good thing with, and I might be wrong on this, but I think Windows 8, it has kind of fairly low requirements, like a gigabyte of RAM, a gigabyte processor, and it should run from what I've read today. So, these people are coming to me asking about their computers, and they're running dual cores, you know, 4 gigabytes of RAM. I say, you will have no problem running Windows 8 if you want to put it on there. So they have options.
Well, I hate to support the Linux community, but, you know, for some of these people.
Wait, what? I didn't hear you. I'm sorry. What? A little louder. Check 1, 2. Is this thing on?
But, you know, for a lot of people, you know, running XP on, you know, just for going to Facebook and whatnot, you know, just switching over to Ubuntu, you know, is a pretty good solution. Generally, well, generally Linux runs good on old hardware, so it should be no problem.
Unless your name's Fred.
I don't have any old hardware. That's a problem.
Oh, Fred, your old hardware.
Well, that's true.
Well, there is. I think Zorin OS is the Linux distro that looks just like Windows XP.
There you go.
And there, if you're all over Google Plus and all over the, you know, you're going to see a lot of forums of how to make Linux just look like Windows XP. So there's,
I think that's a mistake.
I wouldn't do it myself because what's the point?
No, well, I know, but I mean, if it's safe to assume that if you're making it look like Windows XP, it's for somebody who wants it to be Windows XP. So I think it's a mistake to give them something that they think
XP. On that logic, then let's go back to your conversation to say, why are you forcing a UI down me that I didn't want? So moving from Windows XP to Ubuntu.
I mean, that's the difference between, you know, when you buy a Chevy and a Dodge, you turn the headlights on maybe a slightly different way. Okay. But it still goes up and down the road. You know,
well, I'm just saying. So the transition of, I want it to look the same. I don't want to get out of my comfort zone, but I want to be, you know, I want to use something that's going to be, you could use something like an XP interface on top of a Linux box.
Oh, that's fine. I mean, when they call and they can't install, I don't know, can't find their Minesweeper, I'll send them your way. I mean, my point is that it's like, it's not XP.
You are.
It'll
right.
work like a laptop. It'll be very, very, or your, it'll work like the, and it'll be very much like the XP you had and you were used to. It'll work great on your computer, but it's not. It's different. It's
it'll
very
look
similar,
like a duck,
and
it'll
still
walk
be
like
able
a duck,
to,
but it'll sound like a chicken.
You'll still be able to, no, it'll be a chicken.
Wait a minute, I thought we were talking about
it won't be a turkey.
It's a chicken in a duck's clothing.
It's very similar to a turkey, but it's not. It's a chicken. They both taste great.
Yes.
Right.
Oh, mercy.
I don't think we're ever going to have Corey come on our show again. It's like, what a bunch of yahoos.
He has to come back. He's got a big, juicy announcement update thing coming. That's right.
Like, those Americans, I tell you.
So, if he's going to tease us with something, he needs to come back when it's time. So
I'm glad he came on.
I am too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Great show.
Any,
I tell you what, I want to, I might, like I said, I want to reinstall it now. I'm really, I mean, from what he told me today, I got to find a machine to put it on.
Well, you I'm going to share one more tip that I find really, really helpful on Windows 8. And I don't know if you, it's another one of those hidden features. Like when you click, click the start typing on the start menu. When you have an app in Windows 7 or XP or whatever, and it's not responding, you're having trouble with it, everyone goes to the task manager, you open the task manager, click on processes, you kill the process, right?
Right.
Okay. On Windows 8, and I think you'll, any tech will find this handy, you drag the icon, you know how you close a window by dragging from the top in the monitor? So you drag it almost all the way to the bottom, it'll like get small, you'll see the app flip, and then you drag it back up, and it'll just restart the app. It's the same as...
Wow.
Yeah, it's really, really handy. It's the exact same as killing it from the start menu and then going back through that restart process.
Wow.
It's like turning it off and on.
Only for the modern apps.
It only works on modern apps, correct.
Okay.
And quite, you know, it might not even work in update one. I haven't tried it. But it's very handy.
We're going to have to come up with a new slogan. Instead of "have you tried turning it off and on again," have you tried to flip it?
It's like a house.
And then, yeah, exactly. And then it's going to be like, nah, my monitor's broken. Oh, I should have been more specific. I apologize.
But really, with the, you know, with what Corey, what you told us and how efficient it is, I mean, really, there's no reason not to upgrade to Windows 8. I mean, let's say if someone's by a consumer bought a new computer.
I mean, especially so now that Microsoft has basically caved and they're letting you boot straight to the desktop and bring all that stuff back. I genuinely believe that you know, like it or not, modern apps, and I don't even like the term apps, but modern apps are the future. This is the way it's going. They tried to push it, you know, down our throats, as Tim said. And people rejected it, but they're going to ease you into it, whether you like it or not. They want you off the desktop. They want you to stop using those apps that can get viruses, the apps that can talk to each other and do nasty things and do keystroke logging. They want you off of that, and they want you onto the modern stuff that's safer and more secure.
Well, that's, you know, that's something that's not, like you say, it's not even brought up, in their marketing either. The security aspect. So, because, I mean, really, every time they update something, it's because of security.
Well, Windows 8 was touted as being more secure. I didn't know the specifics behind that, but Corey explained that tonight.
Yeah. I want to turn over to Tim because I know he is not a fan. I'm curious if I swayed you even a little bit.
Well, look, I mean, no.
I told you. It's like trying to sway Kerry Holzman. Okay, good luck with that.
I mean, wait, but don't interrupt me. I mean, look, my problem is with the GUI, and the GUI is awful on a laptop if you don't have if you're not touching the screen. Okay, they should have given you like little. They should have Clippy come out. It says, "Hey, swipe. Use your mouse to just kind of do this thing, or use your mouse to do that." But I mean, it was like here, and it was more like Minesweeper because you would like actually do something, and crap would blow up, or things would slide in, and it's like, I mean, after 10 minutes of that, it's like I just want to turn it off, and then 15 minutes later, you can't even turn it off. You want to throw it? I mean, all of the things you're talking about. Things running more securely, things that are shutting down very quickly, 2 seconds. The thing, you know, everything is built into that. That's what I want. Who doesn't want that? But if the GUI is like insanity, forget it. If they had just eased us into it, you know, with this, okay, what would have happened was that people with their Windows phones and tablets would have become familiar with it, okay? If, you know, I'm perfectly satisfied with the Windows desktop start button exactly the way it is. I've used it that way forever. I can get around it very quickly. Okay, but if there was some option, if I could just flip a switch, like maybe long press on the start button and get a GUI that looks just like what's on my Android phone, well, I'd be very comfortable with that. 2 years ago, I wouldn't have. But you know what? I'd be into that because, hey, I'm familiar with that and I could get around very quickly in that as well. They should have just eased people into it. But in typical Microsoft, they know everything. They're huge, and whatever they say, you're going to do. Well, you know what? It's not that I hate Microsoft. I don't love Microsoft. I've used their products forever, so I just feel I don't feel one way or another about the company. But they do these things as if they just know everything and they're huge. Well, that time is going away because, you know, I've got 70-year-old women as customers who are getting around their tablets just fine. Their Android phones, okay,
and WoW machines.
Wow, that was, I don't want to talk about that.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, but no, that's a very good point, is that if they plan to actually maintain this business model of selling an operating system, people have always, when they go to buy a computer, they expect it to be Windows.
Tim,
that's what they're used to forever. And so that's starting to go away. People are going to get to the point where they can buy a computer, but it doesn't have to be quote unquote Windows. It could have, it could look differently. Actually, Windows did that to them. So I just, I don't know. They know everything, and then they don't understand why it gets rejected, and they have to fire people. It's crazy to me.
Well, here's a question for you, Tim. And I say this because, you know, you guys know where I come from. I'm a Linux guy. I'm not pushing Windows 8. I'm buying all the machines for my clients, Windows 7. I'm not a big fan of the UI. I think, like Tim, I agree. I think what they've done on the behind the scenes is great, but you know, it still has a terrible UI. And because they forced it on us. Tim, would you have a different opinion and a point of view if they did not wipe out all the machines in your local shops to be Windows 8 and they both presented you with Windows 7 and Windows 8 at the same time at your local Best Buy or
Fry's? No, that would be a mistake. That would be a mistake as well. I can still get Windows 7 machines. We could just order from Dell. We have, you know, no big deal.
Of course.
They all should have been Windows 8, but just with a standard desktop the desktop that you're familiar with, and start, you know, you only raise the temperature slowly when you're boiling the frog, so the frog never notices. Okay, if they could just do that, well, then it would have been fine. Okay, people would have been comfortable with the change. I'm not even saying that the change is bad. It was just too drastic.
Oh, I think that's fair enough. I think that's true. I don't think anybody can argue that.
I agree with that, too.
By the way, we do eat frogs.
That's the only thing I've been saying. I don't know why I'm like the crazy guy out in the woods eating honeycombs and locusts. Okay. That's the only thing I've ever said about Windows 8. I don't necessarily hate the change. It's just too drastic. Ease us into it.
Well, I think with the changes they've made, Tim, I think it's you're back in business because,
well, you don't know that. And they only showed pictures, and Microsoft is just, they'll release an update that makes it all worse. Okay.
He does live in a cabin in Montana, by the way, somewhere. The hills.
Well, that's maybe I do and maybe I don't, but nobody needs to know where I live.
Every time he moves, he makes his office look exactly the same.
That's right.
I've moved twice since the show started.
He's got sales.
I'm not confrontational about that. That's just my opinion. Until we start seeing some changes, it's going to stay that way. So, I mean, I really appreciate Corey come on here and telling some of the stuff that, you know, because like I said, Windows 7, Windows 8, I have to assume there's you know, some changes. I want to know what they are. But he was right when he said that, hey, Windows 8, it's going to make you want to, like, flap your thing around and, like, be jumping on tables and dancing. I'm like, I don't want to do that. That doesn't help me buy this product. So.
I wonder.
Another marketing blunder.
I wonder if Windows, with Microsoft now backing off of this and actually going back to an original form where everybody's more comfortable with, I wonder if Windows 9 is going to be a hybrid of the two now, where we're going to go back to the traditional, if you will, desktop without the Metro interface. I know it's not called Metro interface, but Windows 9. Modern apps, I'm sorry. But I wonder if Windows 9 will give you the two things now. Do you have a desktop or do you want a tablet edition and go back to that? Because they're not afraid of giving you 14 different editions. Look at Office or look at Server 2012. They're quite comfortable with trying to sell you 18 different editions to do 13 different things. You know, they, but I'm hoping that in the future that this is a lesson learned on their
part. And Nick had a good point in the chat. He said he uses Windows 8, but he uses a desktop. Mm-hmm. And if Microsoft wanted to, they could have those desktop applications suspend too when you're not using it, if they want to do it, which is a good point.
They actually, if they did that, they would break compatibility with every single desktop app in the world, right? Like, in Instant House Call right now, if you're using the desktop app, if it suddenly suspended it, it would.
Oh yeah, you're right.
I had no idea what to do.
Right.
Well, you're a programmer. Nick's a programmer, so I don't know.
Well,
I believe you guys. I listen to you guys.
All right. Well, we have anything else for Corey? Or Corey, you got anything else where we wrap things up here?
No, it's great. Great to be on the show. Thank you very much, guys.
Yeah, we really do appreciate you coming on and again, your support of the podcasting community is great, and can't say enough about it.
Yeah, I do have to say, coming from Linux and not really using much of Windows 8, you make me want to go ahead and try it, give it a shot. I need to kick the tires a little bit more, and so I want to thank you from me for coming on and kind of showing me some of the behind the scenes you know, some of the steak behind the sizzle.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much for having me. It was a pleasure. Hope we can do it again sometime. And, yeah,
when you get your big announcement. You know, one thing we failed to mention in the beginning, Corey, I think, is where can people find you at? Where can they find your product?
The product's at instanthousecall.com. You can find all the details there. If you want to reach out to me directly, you're welcome to. I can be reached at Corey, C-O-R-E-Y, at instanthousecall.com.
Fabulous. Thank you very much.
And Fred, if people want to get a hold of you, how can they do that?
Why, you can get a hold of me at fred@jetspeedit.com. And that's not JetSpeed It. It's JetSpeed IT, just for the record.
I can't go on.
I've killed the host.
All right. Mitch, if people want to give us a voicemail or email, comments, questions, or something like that, how can they get a hold of us?
Email geeksters@podnuts.com, or you can send us a voicemail at 7076-PODNUT, 7076-PODNUT.
Very cool. Tim, people want to get a hold of you?
Yeah, when I'm not wandering around the hills building small sun temples from stones that I've collected, you can find me. I'm Tim Bauermeister on the G+. I'm in like Tim at the Podnuts forums, or you can email me. I'm tim@realpcrepair.com.
Nice, nice. And before we get to how you guys can get a hold of me, we did mention it a couple times on the show that Nick Shaw, Foolish IT, was in the chat rooms. You guys, if you have not checked out D7, if you haven't looked at that product, he's a big supporter of Geeksters. He's a big supporter of Podnuts. He's a big supporter of tons of things. I don't even know how much he supports. I just know he supports a lot. He's got big shoulders. Check out his stuff. It is top notch. This guy puts blood, sweat, and tears into his stuff. If you want to find out more, check out the last Podnuts Daily at 80-something. I can't remember which one it was, but I had a chance to sit down and talk to Nick about his D7 II, the new product, and we went on it. And this guy just lives, breathes, eats, sleeps D7. Awesome, awesome product. But if you guys want to get a hold of me, I'm martin@obandocomputing.com. I'm masculine in the forums and in the chats. And yeah, guys, it's been... Corey, again, from us here at Geeksters, it's been a huge pleasure to have you on the show, and I have thoroughly enjoyed this time.
Well, thank you very much for having me.
All right, guys. Well, I'll sign us off, and everybody have a great fiscal week until we see you next time. Bye, guys.
D7 II is here. Go to foolishit.com for more information.